Please stand by. We're about to begin. Good day, everyone, and welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange conference call. Today's call is being recorded. For opening remarks and introductions, I would like to turn the call over to Ms. Jennifer Chen. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Sheila, and welcome everyone to today's WebSphere Support Technical Exchange. My name is Jennifer Chen, and I will be the moderator for this call. This call is being recorded, and early next week, an MP3 file and presentation will be available on the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site. You may replay it at your convenience. If you have not yet joined the e-meeting, please do so now. An e-meeting URL is available to you from the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site. We apologize for the inconvenience if you usually view the presentation through the PDF file provided online. The WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site is undergoing a new user interface. You may access the presentation by going to any IBN.com site and type in 700-8375 in the search box. Today's presenter is Greg Bowman. Greg began in IBM customer support for CICS in 1987. In 1996, he transitioned over from CICS support to begin supporting MQ series, now known as WebSphere MQ. He has supported MQ on mainframe as well as distributed platforms, but now he concentrates on the distributed platforms. Today's topic is automate handling of WebSphere MQ dead letter messages. The webcast will include a PowerPoint presentation. During the presentation, all lines will be muted. After the presentation, I will ask attendees to answer a few quick questions via e-meeting polling. After that, the lines will open for a question and answer period. Again, you may also access the presentation by going to any IBM.com site and type in 700-8375 in the search box. At this time, I'd like to turn the presentation over to Greg.
Thank you, Jennifer. I'd like to first welcome you today. We'll be covering this presentation on how to automate handling of WebSphere MQ dead letter messages. And as she said, I am Greg Bowman. I've been with the MQ support team for about 10 years now. So if you've been in the position where you opened a problem record with the MQ support team, we may have bumped into each other during that time. So at this time, I'd like to get going with our presentation, and if you'll turn to page 2. By way of introduction, what we'll be talking about today is the dead letter message handler, and its purpose is such that when you have messages that can't be delivered to their intended destination, they can be sent to a dead letter queue. Now, when this happens, MQ does provide you a way to automate the handling of these messages so you do not have to do it manually every time. And the way you would go about automating this process is through the use of the supplied program and command runmqdlq. This is the dead letter queue handler program, and this is what our presentation will be mainly centered around today. So if we go to page 3. Here's our agenda, what we'll be discussing during this presentation. First, we'll talk about the dead letter queue. We'll talk about what's special about the dead letter queue, what's not special about the dead letter queue, and the details revolving around that. We'll discuss the dead letter message itself and the header that identifies a dead letter message when it arrives on the dead letter queue. We'll talk then about the dead letter queue handler. And that is, as I mentioned in the previous slide, the RunMQ DLQ program. And then we'll very briefly talk about a sample dead letter queue handler program that's there for anyone who wants to get a little more sophisticated than what the sample program will allow you to do. Once we discuss that, we'll get into the how-tos and wherefores of invoking this dead letter handler. And we'll discuss a rules table, which will allow you to direct the dead letter handler to take the actions you want it to take on messages that meet certain criteria that you can specify within this table so that you can automate the way each kind of message is handled by the dead letter message handler. And then finally, we'll get into some examples so you can actually see what it looks like when you're using the runnq dlq command to process messages from the dead letter queue. So on the next page, the dead letter queue is the destination where messages will be delivered if the queue manager is not able to send the message to a specified queue. Now, the dead letter queue itself is any queue that you define. The standard message, or excuse me, the standard queue that is typically set up by most users is system.dead.letter.queue. Now, there's nothing special about this queue. It's typically defined as a local queue with no special parameters other than the default values when you define a local queue. But the name can be anything you choose for it to be. By default, a queue manager doesn't have a dead letter queue, so you have to define one. You simply go into the interface, RunMQSC, or through the Explorer if you're working with the MQ on Windows, and define a local queue and name it anything you want. Like I said, the standard is system.dead.letter.queue. But once you define that queue, you have to alter your queue manager to point to that queue so that it knows where to put dead letter messages whenever the situation arises that it can't deliver a message to the queue that it had planned to send the message to. So the dead letter queue itself, there's really nothing special about it except that the queue manager points to that queue. And if you turn to the next page, here's just an example of a RunMQSC interface to display the queue manager attributes for a queue manager. This was actually done on a Windows machine, but it looks very similar if you're doing it from a Unix interface, AIX or Linux or Solaris, HP, any of those systems would look very similar. And you'll see the highlighted section there. When you display the queue manager, there's a parameter called dead queue. And in this case, I have it pointed to system.dead.letter.queue. That is the queue I have defined as my dead letter queue. As I said earlier, you can name it anything you want there as long as you point your queue manager to this. You can come in and alter the queue manager property dead queue to point it to that, or actually when you create your queue manager at that point, if you want to specify a queue that you will use as your dead letter queue, you can specify the name of the queue at that point. And you can actually go back and create that queue after the queue manager itself has been created. It'll let you point to a queue that doesn't exist yet. And then after the queue manager is created, you can go in and just create that queue. Okay, if we go to the next page. Now, once you have that queue defined, if there's an occasion where the queue manager can't deliver the message to a queue, for example, it is trying to put to a queue that doesn't exist, or it's trying to put to a queue that's full, or any variety of reasons, it can, instead of rejecting the request, it can place the message on a dead letter queue and let other processing continue on. Now, when messages are placed on this dead letter queue by the queue manager, or in some cases by the channels if they're coming from remote queue managers, they will go to the dead letter queue, and MQ will affix a dead letter header to that message to identify the reason why that message was placed on the dead letter queue. Along with the reason code, there's some other information included in a dead letter header, such as where the message came from and details about where it was intended to go, that are also included in the dead letter header to help identify what actions should be taken when you're processing that message. But by default, the queue manager or channel, when they place a message on the dead letter queue, will put this dead letter header into the message as it goes on the dead letter queue. Now, I mentioned several times that the dead letter queue is just an ordinary queue, so there's nothing to stop you from having applications put directly onto that dead letter queue themselves. The catch is, if you do that, your application should create a dead letter header when they place the message on the queue. The application would actually have to build the dead letter header itself and insert it into the message when it places it on the queue. If it doesn't, then when the RunMQ DLQ process attempts to handle that message, it will reject it, saying that there's an error because it didn't have a recognized dead letter header. But if MQ, the queue manager or channel, places a message on the dead letter queue, it will automatically have one of these DLH or dead letter headers included with it. If we go to the next page, we'll see here's a layout of what the dead letter header actually includes. It begins with a struct ID or structure ID. It's actually what we call an eye catcher. It'll spell out DLH blank if you actually were looking at output showing that message from the queue. You'd actually see an eye catcher there that says DLH blank to help identify the beginning of the dead letter header itself. Subsequent information will have a field that has a version. You'll typically see that as 7 zeros and a 1, 00000001. And then the next field, the reason field, that's probably your most important field. When you look at that reason code, you can determine why the message arrived on the dead letter queue. And the reason codes are going to be a match for the MQRC reason codes or for MQFB feedback codes. And these are documented in your application programmer's reference guide, or they're also at least the MQRC reason codes are documented in the MQ messages manual in a little bit more detail about what the reason means and what it equates to. But that reason code field is probably your most one of your most important fields anyway. The next couple of fields are also important as if you're trying to determine where the message was intended to go, because it contains the name of the original destination queue and the original destination queue manager. The subsequent information has some additional details about encoding and character set IDs and the actual format of the original message, and then some details about the application that was doing the put that caused the message to arrive here. So the dead letter header is going to have all your details about what caused this message to arrive on the dead letter queue. And if we go to the next page, this just goes into a little detail about what I was just saying. The reason codes in that dead letter header are MQRC and MQFB feedback codes, and they're documented in the messages manual and in the application programming reference, actually in Appendix B of that manual. So if we go on to the next page, here's a sample of a message that was on a dead letter queue, and this particular sample is from a Windows system. And I'm not sure if you can read it too well. If you have problems here, perhaps once you get the PDF file, it'll be a little clearer, but I'll try to explain what's shown here. What I have here is a sample program, the AMQSBCG, which is a sample browse program. I use that just to display a message that was on a system.dead.letter.queue. And what I have highlighted here is the initial MD message descriptor that's on this message is similar to any message descriptor you would see on any message on any of the MQ queues. Any message that goes to a queue is going to have one of these MD message descriptors at the beginning of the message information that's on that queue. And what you'll notice here and what I wanted to highlight here is the format field of this is called MQDead. And the purpose of that is that when the program, in this case the RunMQ DLQ program, reads that message off the queue, he sees that there's a format of MQ dead. What that tells them is that if he goes beyond the MQMD structure, that there will actually be this DLH header that we've been talking about. So the MQ dead, I just highlighted here to show you that the format of the message descriptor at the beginning tells you that there's a DLH. It's not actually the DLH itself. The DLH comes a little later in the message, but this message descriptor does identify that there is a DLH included in the subsequent message data. If we go to the next page, this is just a continuation of that message that was browsed on the previous page. And at the end of the message descriptor, it actually will start dumping out the message text itself. If this were any, say, typical application queue, at this point you would see the application data from the message at the point where it has asterisks and then message, and then it'll actually have a length of how long the message is. Then it dumps out the message data. In this case, prior to what the regular application data was in the original message, is where the DLH portion of the message resides. This is the DLH header. And it begins at offset 0, and it'll actually have the hexadecimal representation on the left-hand side, and then out to the right, if you're browsing it, they'll have an eye catcher that'll start with DLH blank. And then, as we mentioned on previous FOILs, the DLH blank is the struct ID. If you were mapping this out with that DLH header that we had a few pages back, you would see the struct ID is first, the DLH blank followed by a version, and in this case it's 01000000, and then the next field is our reason code. Now in this case it says our reason code is 0508000. Since this is a Windows machine, we're using what's called a little Indian representation of this data. And if you're not familiar with Indian, it basically identifies how the processor reads the data, whether it's reading from low order to high order or high order to low order. And on Intel processors, which are typically Windows or some Linux machines, the Intel processors use what's called little Indian. And they use low-order byte representations to represent the data. So if you're reading this in relation to how humans would read it, you have to do what they call byte swapping to actually identify the data. So it gets a little bit tricky. We really don't have time to go too in-depth into byte swapping and details of how to do that conversion, but I will touch on it just briefly here. For this example, the 0508000, if you break it down and do byte swapping, you end up breaking it in half to start with. So you have 0508 as one half and 0000 as the other half. If you swap both of those, or excuse me, if you break both of those halves down and swap them around, so you have 0508, you break it in half, and then swap those two bytes around, you now have 0805, and then the other one is all zeros, so it stays the same. Now you have 0805, you have to swap that with the first half. So now you have 00000805. That is going to be your actual reason code. And I understand if this is new to you, it probably didn't make a lot of sense. And I apologize for not being able to go into great detail about byte swapping. But I did want you to be aware that if you're looking at these reason codes on a Windows machine or some Linux machines, if you look at that reason code and it doesn't quite fit what you are expecting, it's probably because you hadn't done the byte swapping yet. But if you were to look up 0805 in the MQ reason codes, you'd find that equates to a MQRC queue full. So in this particular example, this message landed on the dead letter queue because the originally intended queue was full. Now, if you follow on to the next field after that reason code, in this particular example, the next field is SC00B. That was the name of the originally intended queue. So that queue was full, and so it placed the message on this dead letter queue with a header, a dead letter header that identified the reason. If we go to the next page, I have a similar sample. It's the same kind of thing, except in this particular instance, I used AIX queue manager and had it go to the dead letter queue on that queue manager. And you'll see when I browse the message here, it has the same type information. It's got a message descriptor at the beginning that has a format of MQDead. And again, that tells you that there's a DLH going to follow the initial message descriptor. This message descriptor itself is not the dead letter header, but it does tell you that there's one to follow. And if we go to the next page, this is a continuation of the browse of that message. And what I wanted to point out here, if you go down to the section under the message where it lists out the actual message data this time, again, it starts with DLH blank. And then it has a reason code, or excuse me, it has the version, and then the reason code. And you'll see that the reason code this time is not byte swapped. In this case, it's using Big Endian formatting, which is typical of most of your Unix platforms. And it has a reason code of 00000805. And if you recall, that's the same value we ended up with after we did the byte swapping in the Windows example. So again, we have a 0805 reason code, which says the message landed on this queue because the originally intended queue was full. And again, it tells you the name of the queue that it was intended to go to was test in this case, and it couldn't go there because that queue was full, so it placed the message on the dead letter queue. If you go to the next page, what we'll talk about now is, now that we have seen what some of these messages look like when they land on a dead letter queue, how do you actually handle the messages? And I just lost my presentation. I'm not sure if anyone else did. Once a message arrives on the dead letter queue, you can automate the handling of that message using the dead letter queue handler program. And so that's basically the purpose of this presentation. Now we're starting to get into the heart of what we really wanted to talk about. How do you automate that so that when those messages land on the dead letter queue, they don't just sit there forever or until somebody happens to notice it? How can you automate it so that the process is handled by some prearranged rules and regulations for handling messages that have a specific reason for being on that dead letter queue? And if we'll go to the next page, we'll talk about how you can do that. Now, you start the dead letter queue handler program using a runmqdlq command. This is the supplied dead letter queue handler. There's a lot of more details, specifics on the options you can use for that, and we'll get into some of those here, but there's a lot more of them documented in the system administration guide. But just as an example of how you would go about running this, you would say runmqdlq, then the name of your dead letter queue that you want him to process messages from, and the name of the queue manager, and then you can redirect the output, or excuse me, the input to that command to come from a rules table. And the rules table is where you define how you want that runmqdlq process to handle the messages that it finds on the dead letter queue. And then if you wanted to point it to a different queue manager than your default queue manager, you would need to specify the queue manager name within that parameter. And if you wanted to point it to a different queue than your default dead letter queue, the one that your queue manager points to, you could do it with that set the DLQ parameter. And I'll get into that a little bit later about why you might want to point it to a different queue. But if we go to the next page, the RunMQ DLQ program is the supplied sample program that will handle those messages. If that does not meet your needs, if you want to get more sophisticated with the handling of those messages than the RunMQ DLQ program provides for, there's a sample program that we provide called AMQS DLQ, and that gives you the source for a program that by default basically will do the same thing as the RunMQ DLQ command. But because you have the source, you can add to it or modify it to meet your specific needs. And one example when you might want to do that is if you had applications that are actually placing messages on the dead letter queue. And one example in which you might do this is if you didn't want to have your applications actually be responsible for building that dead letter header into the message themselves, they can still place the message on the queue. And if you have this special AMQS DLQ, you could modify it to say, when I find a message without a dead letter header, take these specific actions. And that way you could customize the environment so that you can still handle messages that are put on the dead letter queue in the standard default way, plus you can add additional handling by allowing the AMQS DLQ program to do whatever special requirements you have for it. So if we go to the next page, the rules table is a way of defining how the dead letter queue handler is going to process the messages it finds on the dead letter queue. Now, the rules table is made up of two types of data. One is called control data, and then the second are the actual rules. The rules table is such that you could either have a file with the information set up in it, which is the standard way of doing things, and within this rules table file, you can specify this control data in the rules that you want it to handle. But the RunMQ DLQ program could just as well take the rules from standard in. If you wanted to type out all the rules that, as you typed in RunMQ DLQ, you could do that, and the RunMQ DLQ is set up to be able to handle that as long as you enter them in the correct format, because it just takes standard input from as its input. You could redirect it from a file. And the reason you might want to do this is if you didn't have it set up to be monitoring your dead letter queue, if you don't have the RunMQ DLQ program monitoring it all the time, you can still use it to handle exception cases. So if you happen to find messages on your dead letter queue someday and you wanted to handle them just that one particular instance, you can start the RunMQ DLQ and only specify one or two rules within the input to that command and have it process the messages off of that queue that way, just, you know, on the fly, if you will. So if we go to the next page, we'll talk about the details of what's in this rules table file. The control data is optional, but if you do specify any control data, it has to be the first thing in the rules table file. Any control data that you specify has to come before any rules that you specify. By default, one of the control data parameters is input queue, and by default, it's going to be the name of the dead letter queue which your queue manager points to. So if you don't specify input queue as a parameter, it'll take whatever you specify on the command line. Well, excuse me, if you specify it on the command line, it'll override what you specify in the input queue parameter is what I was trying to say. The input QM is the input queue manager, and this is the name of the queue manager that it's going to connect to. And again, it's going to take what you specify on the command line and override these parameters. But if you just started RunMQ DLQ without any parameters and redirected it to take input from your rules table file, you could specify the name of your queue and queue manager on these parameters and have it know which queue and queue manager to go process. There's also a retry interval parameter that tells the RunMQ DLQ process how long to wait in between retries of a message. So, for example, if you had a rule in your table that said, if I find a message that has a queue full, I want you to do a retry, he'll try to send that message to the original destination, and if the condition of that queue being full has been resolved, then it'll just land on that queue and proceed as normal. But if the queue is still full, it'll wait this retry interval and try again to send the message to the queue. And you can specify in your rules how many times you want it to try. You may want it to try twice, 5 times, 1,000 times. You can tell it how many times you want it to try. And this interval allows you to tell how long to wait between those retries. And then the other control data parameter is wait. And you can specify whether you want it to wait for messages. So if the RunMQ DLQ program is started and there's no messages on the dead letter queue, should it wait for messages or should it just end? And if you say wait, yes, it'll wait until messages arrive on that queue and process them. And once it's processed all those messages, it'll come back and wait for any new ones. If you say no, it'll just look at the queue. Once it gets through the queue and there's no messages available, it'll end. I believe in version 6, there's also now a parameter that you can specify how long you want it to wait. If you didn't want the wait to be indefinite, you can specify the number of seconds that you want the program to wait before giving up. If we go to the next page, once you specify the control data, if you have any of those parameters that you want to specify, then you can start specifying your rules. And the rules follow certain patterns, or there's pattern keywords that it uses to recognize that the next sequence of input is a rule that it should take action on. Now, the keywords that are documented in the manual, but we'll get into some of them here. And one example is, and probably the most common used, is reason. When you have a rule, you tell it, look for a message that has a specific reason. So in our example earlier, we had a queue full. You could tell it to look for reason MQRC queue full. And whenever it finds a message that meets that particular reason, then you can tell it to take an action. Another example, though, is desk. And what that says is look at the message, the dead letter header, and find out where the message was originally intended. And if it matches that, then take a specific action. So you may know that if messages were going to a certain queue and they landed on a dead letter queue, you want them to be forwarded to a different queue or to a different queue manager even. So you can give them an action that says desk queue, and then if it matches that desk queue, take a specific action. If you go to the next page, it's just a continuation of the rules. The keywords here are going to be how you define within your rule table how the messages are going to be processed. So the once you have matched, say, a reason or a desk queue, then you have to tell it what to do with it. And you give it an action of either discard the message, ignore it, just leave it on the dead letter queue and go on to the next one. Retry, which says find out where it was originally intended to go and try to send it there again. Or forward, which says I want to forward it to a different queue. There's other parameters here once you specify an action. For example, if you tell it forward, then you can say forward queue is the name of the queue where you want the message to be forwarded to, and forward queue manager, you know, if you want it to go to a different queue manager, you can tell it the queue manager name. Now, of course, if you want to forward it to a different queue manager, you have to already have definitions set up in place so that it can get to that other queue manager. it doesn't magically create the channels and so forth for you, unless you're actually using clustering. In that case, it could build those definitions on the fly. But typically, if you want to have a message forwarded, you're going to have the definitions already set up in place to have it be able to get to that remote queue manager. There's also a parameter called header, and what that says is, do you want it to leave the DLH header in the message when it takes the action? Now, the reason you might want to do this is if you have certain conditions, say a certain reason code or a certain destination queue, you might want to move them off of the dead letter queue onto a holding queue. And you could, in that case, leave the dead letter header in it, forward it to this other queue, and then later on you could come back and process those messages. Now, because it's on a queue and it still has that dead letter header in it, you could use RunMQ DLQ to process those messages. At that time, you could have set up a different rules table, perhaps, and have RunMQ DLQ point to this other queue that you set up as a holding queue and have it process messages off of there. So you don't have to only point RunMQ DLQ at the dead letter queue that your queue manager points to. While that's the standard in the most common scenario, you may have occasions like this where you want to move the messages to a holding queue and then process them later or at a time of your convenience. In that case, you can point the dead letter queue handler at this other queue. There's a parameter called putAuth or putAuthority, which defines whether you use the original user ID that was associated with the message when it landed on the dead letter queue, or whether you want it to use use the user ID that's associated with RunMQ DLQ. And this could be particularly helpful if your messages landed on the queue because you didn't have your user ID set up on a queue manager or on a machine where the queue manager resides, and you wanted the messages to be processed anyway. You could, instead of going in and altering every message to say change this message ID associated with this message, you could have the dead letter queue just process them using his own user ID. And if that user ID was authorized, then the putAuth parameter could be used to tell it to use his user ID to process those messages and get around a problem such as that. So that's a common scenario where you might want to use putAuth. And then the retry parameter is just as its name suggests. It says take an action of retry or how many times you want to retry. If you take the action retry, how many times do you want to retry that before giving up? If we go on to the next page, we'll talk about some of the conventions that are commonly used when you're setting up your rules table. You have to have at least one rule specified when you start the RunMQ DLQ. Otherwise, it won't know what to do with the messages when it finds them. Now, it could be that you set up that rule to only have an action and not have a reason. So, for example, you may just say, I want one rule. I want it to have an action that says retry 50 times, regardless of the reason. So you could leave the reason blank, and when he finds that, he says, okay, I didn't have to match on any particular reason or best queue. I just take this action for any message that I find, and you can just have a single rule that way. Now, the keywords within the rules can occur in any order. They can only be included once. So if you have a rule that says reason MQRC queue full, you can't on the same rule say also reason MQRC put inhibited. You can have two different rules that have one that has reason queue full and one that has reason put inhibited, and they can both take the same action, but you can't have two reasons within a single rule. You have to have separate rules for them. These keywords are not case sensitive. So you could put them in upper and lowercase, and it'll still recognize that a reason in lowercase is a reason in uppercase. And the way you input them is each keyword has to be separated by at least one blank or a comma. So you could have your reason, space, action, or you could have reason, comma, action, and it'll recognize either one of them. But it has to have either a comma or a space in between them to differentiate between the two different keywords. And as long as you have your control keywords first, followed by these rules keywords, then he'll recognize those and process them. Now, if you have multiple rules and you have actions set up, if it comes to a message and you, say, have a rule that says MQRC full and the message was on the dead letter Q because Q full, that's the first reason that, or excuse me, the first rule that matches is the first one that gets processed. Now, if you also had a second rule that said death queue, and it matched that one also, it would never make it to that if it matched the first rule. So, if you have multiple rules that would that a particular message would have matched for, the first one it identifies as matching is the action that's going to take for that particular message. So, if we go to the next page. Continuing with the conventions, there can be any number of blanks at the beginning or ending of a rule. It is fairly liberal with the punctuation and keywords and so forth. So it's going to be accepting if you put a whole string of blanks at the front or end of a particular rule. But each rule has to begin on a separate line. That's what I was saying before about you couldn't have two reasons on the same line, because he would take those as both being for an individual rule. For reasons of portability, the entries in here can't exceed 72 characters. So if you have a rule that would end up being more than 72 characters, you have to go to a second line. That's okay. It will accept that. You just can't go beyond 72 characters per line. And again, that's for portability, so that the rules table could be run on any platform. If you want to see all these rules conventions in more detail, they're documented in the System Admin Guide in Chapter 12, and it discusses every one of these in that chapter of the System Admin Guide. If we go to the next page, this is a sample of what a rules table file would look like, and you can see that there's lots of comments here, but if you pick it out, the actual data within the rule table starts out with the control data, and it, in this particular instance, it identifies the input queue and the input queue manager, and it has a retry interval of 20 seconds here. So we have, in this case, specified the specific queue and queue manager that we want to associate the command with, and the retry interval of 20 seconds. Now, after that control data, we actually have our rules, and we have a few rules listed here. We have one for MQRC Q-full is the reason, and it says in that particular instance, take an action of retry. And you'll notice here I just had it go to a second line. It has a plus to tell us that there's a continuation onto the second line, and then it has a retry of five times if it matches that reason code, and he attempts to retry and is unsuccessful the first time, he'll retry it up to five times. There's a second rule there that says MQRC put inhibited. So if we go down through the rules and we don't match Q full, we go to the second one and say, okay, was this message placed here because put inhibited? And we're taking the same retry, same action. We're doing a retry with a retry of five times. Now, at that point, we go to the next rule, and you see on that rule, it doesn't actually have a reason. So he's going to match anything that falls through here as sort of a catch-all. It's going to match any reason that hadn't matched a previous reason. In this case, he's going to forward it to another queue called dead queue. So if we go to the next page, We're going to get into some examples of what it looks like to run the RunMQ DLQ program. Now, just a couple of points here before we look at the examples is the dead letter queue takes input from standard in other words, from your keyboard. So you can redirect that input to come from a specific file by pointing the command to the file that you want it to take the input from. But you can also just type in the input at the keyboard, and that's acceptable for him to take the input from standard in. Now, once you have finished typing all the rules that you want to type in, if you're, you know, entering the rules from the keyboard, if you're on one of the Unix platforms, the way you signal to it that you're through entering your rules is you give it an end of file, which is the Control D character. So once you've entered all your rules, you do Control D, and that signals to the program that it should start running now and take that as the end of the rules table file. On Windows, it's a little bit different. Once you have entered your data, you do Control Z Enter. You have to do it twice, and it's Control Z and then the Enter key, Control Z and then the Enter key, and then that marks the end of input on a Windows machine. We'll go to the next page. This is an example from a Windows platform. And you'll see we did RunMQ DLQ, and we actually specified the name of the queue and the name of the queue manager that we wanted it to process from. So in that case, we're just going to take the input for the name of the queue and the name of the queue manager from the command line. Now, in this case, we're not going to take input from a file. We're just going to type it in from standard in. So once we hit enter, we're into input mode from that first line, and he's taking the input. So the first thing you have to specify is whether you want any control data parameters. In this case, we had a couple. We have wait, yes, and retry interval 20 seconds. So we're going to tell it to wait for any messages. If there's not any on the queue, wait for them to show up, and then have a retry interval of 20 seconds if he has to do a retry on anything. And then the next line is a reason. And it's very similar to what we had in our sample rules table file. He's doing a reason of MQRC queue full, and his action is retry, and he says retry 5 times. Then we add another reason, put inhibited, retry 5 times. And then our final reason is asterisk. In this case, I did it with an asterisk just to show that you can do it that way to tell it any reason. Take an action of forward to a queue of dead queue, and you can see we did Control Z Enter, and at that point he gives you back an indication that he is running. He gives you an AMQ 8708 dead letter queue handler started to process message from, and he tells you the queue he's processing it from. So that's how you would actually enter the commands on a Windows. If we go to the next page, this is an example on Windows again, but in this case, I wanted to show you what it would look like if we entered the data and you didn't follow the correct format. So in this case, I entered the command on the command line, appointed them to the queue and the queue manager again, and then I started to enter my rules, and then I said, oh, I forgot I wanted to add a control that says wait yes. And so after I did that, I did Control Z Enter to tell it that was my input. And you'll see you come back in with a message that said syntax error on line 2. Now, the line 2 in this particular case is the one that says wait, and he actually flags that on the next line. He tells you it's the line that starts with wait. But the actual input, line 1, starts with the what he would consider the rules table. And that's the initial line is the command, the RunMQ DLQ command, and any parameters you give it on the command line. And then the line 1 is the first line that he would consider his rules table. In line 2, we have wait. Now, as I said several times, the control data has to be first. And because it wasn't, he rejected it and gave an error message saying that he detected an error on line 2. And then he gives you error messages just to let you know what's going on. So if we go to the next page, I got an example here of what it would look like entering the same type of commands on a AIX queue manager. And this time I pointed it to a different queue. Remember, we had the example where I had moved stuff off of my dead letter queue. I had forwarded them there with the header still intact. That's what I'm giving an example of here. So I'm pointing it to dead queue this time instead of my default system.dead.letter.queue. And again, once I hit enter, I started giving it input. My control data comes first, and I have a reason. In this case, I'm saying whatever the reason is of these messages on this queue, now I want you to retry them, and retry them 5 times. And then I'm through with that input. I do a control D to signify end of file. You can see that it comes back with a message to say that it started the dead letter queue handler to process messages off the dead queue. We go to the next page. So that is what we wanted to talk about in regards to the automation of your dead letter message queue. You can set these parameters up so that when you start your queue manager, you can start running queue, DLQ, and just have it monitoring that queue continuously. Or if you want to use triggering such that when the first message arrives on that queue, you can have it trigger start the running queue DLQ program. We don't have time to get into triggering and how to set up triggering, but I will tell you there's some really good documents in our tech support database. If you search on triggering, there's a must-gather document that has some good hints about setting up triggering. It's also discussed in the application programmer's reference and the application programming guide about triggering. So if you're not familiar with triggering, there's lots of information out there that talks about that. But you can either have the command monitoring it, or you can have it triggered to start it. But once those messages arrive there, the RunMQ DLQ program is how you can go about handling those without having somebody just monitoring it all the time. And if you go to the next page, talk about where you can find some more information on these topics. I mentioned several times about the system admin guide, and in particular, chapter 12 is where it talks about the RunMQ DLQ program. So you can look there for a lot of the information we talked about today. There's also some information in the program and reference that tells you how the dead letter header is formatted and what it looks like, so you can break down those messages. And then the last one on this page is what we call a must-gather document. It's a tech note that goes into details of all the information that you would need to gather if you had a problem where messages arrived on a dead letter queue and you can't quite figure it out, you can't figure out what the reason code is, or you can't quite get that byte swapping thing down. If you have the information listed in this tech note and you come to the support, we can figure out what the problem was. That's the place you want to start. If you come in with that information in the must-gather document, you're going to save yourself a lot of time and make the problem resolution go a lot quicker. If we go to the next page, this is just a page that gives you some additional resources that are some really good links. The first one there is where you can go to find out about the WebSphere technology and how to participate in things like these webcasts or the podcast, or where you can find information about forums on MQ or other topics that are specific to WebSphere products. There's a lot of good information there, so if you want to check that out sometime, you'll probably be glad you did. There's another link there that tells you about upcoming webcasts and conferences. There's a lot of good stuff on the horizon if you're dealing with MQ, and I know there's some other good webcasts coming up in the near future that you want to tune in to hear those. There's a link there about where you can go to join the user group community. You can share ideas there, get ideas of what other customers are doing, get help, you know, setting up things, that, you know, get ideas on how other customers are doing things so that it may help you in making decisions of how you want to go about setting up your particular environments. There's a link there that tells you about the ESR service. That's Electronic submitting of problem records. If you're not familiar with that, you can go to that link there, and it'll give you details how you can submit problems electronically through the ESR tool. And then finally, the last link there is a link where you can go to find how to get weekly reminders or alerts to information by subscribing to this My Support emails. You can subscribe to only get emails about the things that you care about. So if you only care about MQ, you can set it up so you only get emails about MQ. And one thing that you can that's really good to have there, if there's alerts or flashes, if there's some major problem out there that is going to affect most of our users, we're going to put out a flash or an alert about it. This is a way you can be automatically notified when that kind of condition arises. And we go to the next page. Yeah. At this point, before we actually get into the question and answers, I'm going to turn the presentation back over to our moderator, Jennifer, who's going to drive us through the question and answer section. So, Jennifer, if you want to take over here.
Thank you, Greg, and thank you for a great presentation. Before we get to the question and answer session, we would like to conduct a short poll. Questions will appear in the e-meeting, and your participation is greatly appreciated. So the first question, on a scale of 1 to 5, choose a number that best describes how you feel about this statement. The information presented today was useful to me. 1 for strongly agree, 2 agree, 3 neutral, 4 disagree, and 5 strongly disagree. Now we'll move on to the second question. On a scale of 1 to 5, choose the number that best describes how you feel about this statement. The material was well organized and clearly presented. 1 for strongly agree, 2 agree, 3 neutral, 4 disagree, and 5 strongly disagree. Now the third question. Did this call meet your training expectations? 1 for yes and 2 for no. And now on to the second last question. Please provide us with comments to help improve our webcast. And finally, the last question. Is there a topic you would like to see scheduled? Thanks again for your participation. At this point, Sheila, we would like to open the lines for questions.
Yes, thank you. To ask a question, please press the star key followed by the digit 1 on your touch-tone telephone. If you're using a speakerphone, please be sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Once again, that's star 1 on your touch-tone telephone, and we'll pause for just a moment to give everyone an opportunity to signal for questions. And we'll take our first question from Michael Ryan. Please go ahead.
Hey, do you have any scripts available, such as Unix shell scripts or something that might be called, or something that other companies might have set up to actually implement some of these rules? I mean, I know there were examples of things in the dead letter rules table, but it's something that might be set up to automate some of the processes or call in the runmql dlq command itself.
The only thing we have is similar to that example I gave you, which was just the rules table itself. I don't have any sample scripts that would, for example, call runmqdlq at the same time you you start your queue manager or whatever.
Right. But
those links that I was talking about where you can go to the forums, I would be willing to bet there's other people out there who have them who are willing to share those with you.
Right.
But unfortunately, the only thing I have to offer is the sample program, or excuse me, the sample rules tables that we talked about in the presentation.
Thanks.
And we'll take our next question from Abraham Chiria. Please go ahead.
You mentioned that this presentation is available on PDF. How would we get that, or somebody will send it for a request?
There is a tech note. Are you familiar with the tech notes? If you go to the MQ support page, if you're familiar with that, it's one of the links that was included there. If you go to the support page, there's a tech note that includes the PDF file, and within a couple of days, it'll also include an MP3 replay of the broadcast itself. But the tech note is 700-8375.
Okay.
700-8375. If you go to that tech note, it's actually going to have an attachment there of the PDF file, and in a couple of days, also the MP3 replay of the broadcast.
Thanks.
And we'll take our next question from Wanderley Molinari. Please go ahead. Your line is open. Please check your mute button. Hearing no response, we'll take our next question from Paul Patterson, Newark and One. Please go ahead.
Yes, if you're running the Run DLMQ interactively on an AS400, is there any special control character or whatever that you would use to end the inputting of the rules, or can you do it from a command line, or do you have to do it from Q shell, or how does that work?
I don't personally know the answer to that, but if you would send me an email, I can find out from someone who works on our AS400 team or iSeries team and get that information to you. My email address is bowmanga@us.ibm.com. And if you'll send me an email there, I'll be happy to follow up with our iSeries team and get an answer for you about the specifics of the 400 environment.
Thank you.
And we'll take our next question from Imad Henawi, Northwestern Mutual. Please go ahead.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I guess my question is along the same lines as Mike Ryan's, who asked, is it common or is it likely, or how difficult is it to set up a rule such that the deadletter queue handler is capable of parsing the messages and sending them to specific application deadletter queues? Because, for instance, if you have hundreds of middleware IDs and applications that are running on a single queue manager and you're getting tons of messages to the deadletter queue, how likely and how hard is it to parse those messages and send them to specific application messages or application deadletter queues?
Probably the best way of doing that is based on that desk queue parameter that we talked about briefly. If they were originally intended for a specific destination queue, then you probably want to have them go to a specific dead queue, you know, forward them to another queue. It sounds like it wouldn't be that hard, but you may end up having a large number of rules depending on how many different destinations you had there. But it wouldn't be that difficult to come up with a different rule. Where it might get difficult is you may have a large number of rules depending on your particular environment.
Okay. Do you have an example of any sort? Or is there any types of scripts that we can look at that would have that? Or do you know anyone that we could get some information like that from?
Well, the only examples I have are the ones that we had in the presentation, and there's a very similar one in the Chapter 12 of the System Admin Guide, but it didn't go into great detail, but it does show examples using that reason and desk queue field.
Okay, thanks. Thank you.
And we'll take our next question from Mike Duffy. Please go ahead.
Hello, Greg.
Hi.
My question is, if you're running the handler with weight set to yes and decide that you want to shut the handler down, what options do you have to shut that down normally?
Kill the process. That's the easiest way.
Okay, there's nothing like...
There's not like an end MQ, DLQ command. You have to just end the process. So usually the easiest way is just go find that process and kill it.
Okay, so disabling the get or something like that on the dead letter queue would not cause it to shut down then?
You can. It should also, yes. If you wanted to go in and modify the dead letter queue to get inhibited the next time his wait interval expires, he would check and find it get inhibited, and it should cause it to end. But it's probably quicker to just kill the process.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
We'll take our next question from Michael Ryan. Please go ahead.
Hey, I just wanted to add to the last call. I did check, actually two callers ago, I did open up the Chapter 12 in the rules section, and it looks like it's going to be pretty easy. You know, some of the rules, the examples you gave us were, you know, forwarding, and I think it was based on the reason code, but you can also forward based on the user ID or the application name.
Right.
Or the destination queue, so it looks like it's pretty easy to just set up a easy rule to say, you know, if it's application A, send it to, you know, forward, and then application A's dead letter.
Oh, yes. That's correct, yes. Sorry, I didn't pick up exactly what you were asking, but that's exactly right, yes.
Yeah. No, I mean, a lot of the examples you gave always had the reason code, and so I was trying to figure out how I can do it, send it for different applications and get pretty advanced, but it looks like it's pretty easy to do some of that stuff.
Okay. Well, thank you for that input. I think it probably helped some other folks as well.
With one question remaining in the queue, we'd like to remind the audience that if you would like to ask a question or if you have a follow-up question, please press the star key followed by the digit 1. That's star 1. We'll go next to Paul Patterson, Newark and 1. Please go ahead.
Has there been any cases that you know of, and is it possible or any restriction on running multiple dead letter queue handlers on a single queue manager, possibly having two or three dead letter queue handlers processing different queues?
I'm just trying to think of the scenario where you would want that to happen, but I mean, you could have multiple, if you have multiple queues, like if you were forwarding messages from your queue manager's default dead letter queue to other dead letter queues, you could have other running queue DLQ processes running against those queues as well. But if you're asking, can you have multiple running queue DLQs running on the same queue at the same time, it wouldn't prevent you from doing that, but I don't see a scenario where you would want to do that.
No, not running on the same queue, but running on different queues, possibly in the same queue manager. For instance, if you had some really complex filtering criteria that you couldn't do with one rules table, possibly you would have messages forwarded to another dead letter queue where you would have a different rules table that could, you know, process those messages.
Yes, definitely. That's okay. You can definitely do that.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And once again, ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question at this time, that is star 1 on your touch-tone telephone. Star 1, and we'll pause for just a moment to give everyone another opportunity to signal for questions. And at this time, we have no further questions from the phone audience. Ms. Chen, I would like to turn the conference back over to you for any additional or closing remarks.
Thank you, Sheila. At this time, we'll conclude the presentation. We hope the information presented today has been valuable to you. We appreciate your participation. Remember, a replay of this presentation will be available on the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site early next week. We hope you will join us for future presentations, which will also be announced on this site. Thanks very much for joining us today, and thank you, Greg, for presenting today. Have a great day, everyone.
And that does conclude today's presentation. We thank you for your participation, and you may disconnect at this time.